doing everything to begin with. And sometimes we don't even reach maturity. We leave our bodies before. As we go through the vicissitudes of life, we become discouraged, disillusioned. If we're thinking people, we should. For everything ends. Whatever is born must end. And we wonder why. Some of us never reach maturity. We leave our body at an early age. I remember many years ago when I was a kid, I was driving on a bus in New Jersey, and I passed a cemetery. The bus stopped for a short moment by a children's cemetery, and I happened to see the inscription on the tombstone. It said, "So soon done, why was I begun?" I always remember that. I was a child, maybe 2 years old, when I died. So we wonder about these things. What is life all about? If we're lucky, there will be an inner yearning for freedom and release from all sorrow. But there is a way to remove sorrow from your mind, to remove illusion, to remove unhappiness, fear, and to remember that you were never born and you can never die. It takes some searching. And the searching starts within. If you are sincere on your quest for reality, as you begin to search within, as the months pass, you will be attracted to a teacher, or a book, or a tree, or something that will help you on the path. When you're finished with that, you will be attracted to something higher, until you find total moksha, freedom, release, liberation. It can happen in one lifetime, or two lifetimes, or three lifetimes. And there's a beautiful story in one of the issues of The Mountain Path, the Ramana Ashram magazine, by a devotee that I knew way back. I happened to find the other day, and I'd like Mary to read it. Thank you, Mary. Wasn't that a beautiful story? Think about that. Let's sing some songs now. A question I'm usually asked is, Robert, is there any other way besides Atma Vichara, self-inquiry, or complete surrender to God, to attain self-realization, to wake up? It seems, they say, that self-inquiry is too hard. And as far as surrender is concerned, that is also difficult. For they cannot be able to surrender their mind completely. Their mind is filled with thoughts and emotions. It's very difficult to surrender the mind, the ego, and to practice self-inquiry. Is there another way? Have there been people who have been realized through different methods? We'll talk about that a while. Self-inquiry is for the mature soul. What does this mean? The books tell us that it's God's grace for you to become self-realized. And when the time is right, God bestows self-realization upon you. That's in the books. What does this really mean? It means that those of us who have earned it through ceaseless sadhana at one time or another are able to practice self-inquiry. In other words, those people who are able to practice continuously have had many spiritual experiences in their lives. They practiced in many lifetimes. And now they're prepared to practice self-inquiry. This is also true with surrender. It's most difficult to surrender your mind, your emotions, and your body to God or to yourself. Yet this is exactly what you have to do to become free. If you look at yourself, you can see in what category you belong. There are those who try to practice self-inquiry, but it lasts a couple of days, with some a couple of hours. There are those who say, when I come to satsang, I can practice easily, but when I'm by myself, the world grabs hold of me, and my mind becomes filled with worldly thoughts. What should I do? There are many other methods that lead to self-inquiry. Pranayama, Ashtanga Yoga, Raja Yoga, the various yogas, prayer. If you are sincere in these things, the day will come when you will be able to practice self-inquiry. How can you tell where you're at? How badly are you disturbed by your mind, by thoughts, by events? What bothers you? What annoys you? What do you see? This tells you directly if you're suited for self-inquiry. Remember that everything that comes into your life, you are responsible for. no one else. Even if it appears that someone else is responsible for you feeling bad or hurt or upset, the mature student realizes that my mind creates all these conditions. No thing can happen to me unless I prepared myself for it. As an example, you're walking across the street and a car passes a red light and hits you down. It doesn't kill you, it just cripples you. The average person becomes deeply perturbed. They curse the driver, want to kill the driver. Is this really an accident? If you understand how the relative plane works, you will realize that there are no accidents. Everything was preordained. That driver was supposed to pass the red light and hit you, and you were supposed to be crippled. It's no one's fault. It's just the way things are. But really, your mind has created that kind of karma. This is why we're told not to judge anyone, but to live in peace with everyone. This is why we're told not to react to any given condition, but to observe and not allow our mind to think past our nose. To catch your thoughts before they take you over. And you catch your thoughts by becoming the third party and observing, watching, looking at your mind intelligently, deeply, seeing the type of thoughts that you're thinking. If anything has the power to disturb you, you realize you have to work on yourself. You ask yourself, why did this person come into my life? Why did this condition come into my life, into my experience? Is it an accident? Why do I become disillusioned? Why do I have doubts? It's always I. Why do I? If you ask yourself sincerely, the answer will come forth. And you will know that every experience that you've ever been through is a creation of your own mind. And that too shall pass. Nothing lasts forever. Everything changes and everything passes. If you're able to realize these things and work on yourself this way, then you're ready for self-inquiry. But if you're not, you have to practice other methods. Or come to satsang and not think, just sit. Allow something to happen to you. Do not jump to conclusions because things are not going the way you want them to. Remember who the I is, who wants everything to be their way. The ego. The ego appears to be very powerful. It overwhelms most of us. It shows us all kinds of things that are wrong. It wants us to fight and stick up for our rights. It wants us to do all kinds of strange things. But for the mature person, they laugh. They say, "You cannot disturb me. Show me anything you want. Bring to my attention anything you like. I will not be disturbed. I am at peace." But you cannot imagine it's like that when you don't feel it. In other words, many times I hug people and I say, "How are you? How's everything?" And they smile and say, "Great." But that's not necessarily true. There are all kinds of thoughts going on in your mind about your home life, about your work, about other people. Your mind doesn't know the difference between the actual external feeling and the internal feeling. In other words, if you're feeling hate towards someone, but you don't express it physically, it's the same thing to your mind. Whether you're expressing it or holding it in. And you're setting a cause in motion that invariably has to come back as an effect. That is how the false mind works. And I know some of you say, "Well, there is no mind. There are no thoughts." But as I often tell you, you've got to be truthful with yourself. As long as you feel the thoughts, as long as you feel the emotions, then you have to work on yourself to get rid of that first. And don't say there are no thoughts, there is no mind. Because there must be a mind for you, since you're feeling those kind of thoughts and emotions. And the best way to get rid of everything, without self-inquiry, is to watch your thoughts in action. Observe your feelings. And every time you become angry, every time you feel out of sorts, you feel like something is wrong, or somebody isn't doing what you think they should do, and you become disturbed, realize what's happening. Just by the realization, that will stop. Just by realizing what I just explained, you will enter into a new dimension. You will go a step higher in consciousness. And you will be ready for self-inquiry. There are three kinds of realization, of people who become realized. Three methods. Besides self-inquiry. The first is a natural awakening. The second is intensive sadhana, spiritual practices. The third is being at satsang in the presence of a sage. We'll go into this. The first one. Think of the first one, the natural awakening. What does this mean? There have been people on this earth, as you are aware, or have had no spiritual experience, they've done no sadhana, perhaps they're a thief, they may have a bad temper, a bad disposition, yet they awaken for no reason. This is what I mean when I say a natural awakening. You've heard of people like this. They couldn't care less. Yet something happened to liberate them. People like Shankara, Ramana Maharshi, Anandamayi Ma, Shirdi Sai Baba, Nityananda, Neem Karoli Baba, and I can go on and on. These people never wanted anything. They didn't even perform spiritual practices. Yet at a very early age, they awakened. And if you ask somebody why, they'll usually say it's God's will. It's up to God who is awakened in this life and who is not. And that's how it appears. But I can assure you that these people earned it in a previous existence. Even though a previous existence does not exist, and everything I'm talking to you about does not exist, it appears to exist. And it's very strong. That's why I bring these things up. These people earned it. Nothing comes out of nothing. Everyone deserves what they get. The worst thing you can ever do is to compare yourself with someone else. These people are called sages, for they have broken the barrier of ignorance. They can see through the world. And through them, other people become awakened. Then there's the other factor. People who practice intense sadhana in this life, people are very sincere. And they go into their practice every morning, all day long, in the evening before they go to sleep. Spiritual practice comes first in their life. They have no time for spiritual politics. Who's good and who's bad, who's right and who's wrong. They are concerned only with awakening. And they do whatever is necessary to awaken. And they do. Because of their intense sadhana, spiritual practice, they're usually attracted to a guru or a sage who can tell them exactly what to do, and they become realized in this life. People like that have been Ramakrishna, Nisargadatta Maharaj, Paramahansa Yogananda, many others. They have awakened in this life because of the sage they've been with and their intense spiritual practice. The third category is being at satsang with a sage. I contend, if you take an insane person and bring them to sadhana at satsang, after about 6 months, they will become sane. Maybe they were better off insane, who knows. But they will come around and they will be able to see the light. Just by being at satsang, there's a subtle energy that begins to move in your heart. You may not see it or feel it for a while. What usually happens to most people, they become relatively worse than they were before for a while, because all this stuff is coming up from past lives, and their mind is really fighting for existence. This is why it's necessary to have it. I can assure you within 6 months, the same thing will happen. You're not allowing yourself to come into fruition. You're not allowing the subtle energy to transcend the power of negativity that's been within you for so many years and bring you peace and happiness. All you've got to do is see it through. And you will come home safe. Now let's talk about you. Where are you coming from? Only you know. What's going on in your mind right now? Only you know. Does your mind feel agitated, fearful, happy, peaceful? Only you can help yourself by knowing what is really happening. The universe is your friend. The universe is yourself. God loves you. And God is yourself. Everything is yourself. Nothing exists but yourself. Therefore, every emotion, every disturbance, everything that's taking place is happening within yourself. There are not two selves or three selves. There's one self. And that self is called God or consciousness or absolute reality. That self is yourself now. What do you see? if you see something else, it doesn't mean there's another self. And it also doesn't mean that the one self is creating these other conditions. What it means is these other negative conditions are optical illusions. They don't exist. They have no substance, no power. All you have to do is see them for what they really are, nothing, and they'll go away. But if you encourage them by acting upon them, you will become worse. It's something you have to remember. Anyway, when anything happens like that, just don't react immediately, but realize what's going on. Sometimes you have to act as if you're upset or mad, like when this guy comes here and Henry got a little upset. Playfully. As long as you realize you're putting on an act, it's okay. But if you allow yourself to be disturbed, actually, who is it that's disturbed? The ego. The ego wants satisfaction. The ego wants revenge. The ego wants to hurt. The ego wants to stand up for its rights. If you observe the ego, watch the ego, without reacting, the ego will become weaker and weaker until it dissipates, and that's the end of it. But if you allow yourself to give in to it and react to it, then the ego becomes stronger and stronger and stronger, and you appear to get worse and worse. So how do you overcome these things? By realizing they are an illusion. By realizing that the ego does not really exist. By understanding that you are the one self and there's nothing else. Your real nature is consciousness. You are ultimate oneness, emptiness. You are not the body or the mind. You are not any of these conditions that I just described. You are free and liberated now. This knowledge of yourself removes the illusion and sets you free. And do everything around here, play the music, talk, meditate, sit. I get no respect. Okay, we can have questions and comments about what we've discussed or whatever. Bob.
Yeah, you mentioned the two different types, the natural realizers and the realizers who practice the... And how about the third type? Were there any realizers in history who attained realization just by being satsang?
Oh, yes.
Who would that be?
Unknown people.
Are you known?
Yes, plenty. There are plenty. See, what happens is this. When one becomes realized, they're no longer interested in name and fame. If they really be realized, they don't want crowds or people all around them. They become secluded, they stay by themselves. When they go back into the business world, and nobody knows they're alive.
Are there any famous ones like that you might
know? Saddam Hussein. No, not really. How about George Bush?
Next incarnation.
Yes. Because you're aware of those people. There are many people that you're not aware of. The Chinese Zen, the Buddhist, Chan, Americans. There have been many, there are many. Not that much, but there are plenty.
Aren't there lots of just ordinary people who don't make any splash at all?
Yes. Yeah. The more enlightened you become, the more ordinary you become. Enlightenment just means the natural state. There's nothing weird about it at all. And you're quiet. There's not much to say. You just know. You leave everybody alone. So you can do what you like when you realize. You can either become a hermit. You can become a bank president. You can become the King of England. You can do anything, it makes no difference. What I'm trying to say is, a realized person cannot be picked out as being a realized person because they act just like everybody else. Your heart will tell you.
And they can be picked out.
In your heart. It depends on you. This is what I meant in the beginning when I said, if you're truly practicing your sadhana, spiritual disciplines, the time comes when you gravitate toward a real master and divine right action takes place. But you'll know. It's all within you. Remember, there is no difference between you and the sage. You see the difference, but the sage is not. And as you keep coming to satsang, the differentiation becomes smaller and smaller until you become the sage yourself. Someone also asked me, Robert, what if I don't want to become a sage? If I don't want to become enlightened, why should I? For one simple reason. You acquire a profound peace, a bliss, a happiness that is ineffable. You just know and understand that you were never born, you will never die. You can't explain it to anybody. You just know it. And you're at peace. And the world ceases to disturb you. For you're always aware what the world really is. For what? On the contrary, no. Because for the unrealized, there's the ego that takes care of everything. And you become involved in the world. You may acquire human peace and human happiness, but that comes and goes, depending on the circumstances. But for real peace and real happiness, you have to awaken.
And then you know everything.
You just know. It's like when you're dreaming, and in that dream you're involved in all kinds of activities, good and bad. You have some happiness and some sadness. And then you wonder when it's all going to stop. And you wake up. And you see that your past was a dream. It's the same thing. You will awaken from this dream and become free. Awaken. Now. Do ask questions, make comments, curse, scream, holler. Do whatever you like.
Does peace have to reach a certain depth of intensity before realization springs up? Because when people are at a concert, there are thousands of people that are at perfect peace and harmony, and yet nobody has the realization.
That's not real peace. That's external peace. Because they're anticipating the concert. So the peace comes from an external source.
Their mind is quiet.
It doesn't matter. It's for external reasons.
Like lost in the music.
Yeah, right. You can say that. But it's not a real peace. Real peace comes from within. Real peace is something that's completely different than outside peace. You can't compare it at all.
Is it deeper?
Well, it's not only deeper, but it's infinite, like the sky. It's something that has no beginning and no end. It's something that's ineffable. Human peace is kindergarten compared to that. Human peace fluctuates, changes. It needs something to concentrate on. This peace is always the same, the inner peace. It's always the same, under all conditions, because it has nothing to do with your body or mind or affairs. It's something that you become, and no one can ever take it away from you, no matter what they do to you. Your body may go through all kinds of experiences, but your peace can never be disturbed. Because you believe you're not. It's a false belief, so as long as you believe you're not, you have to work on that part of you that says, I am not, by self-inquiry, or any other method that makes you think that you are worldly, or you have a false peace. And when you realize it's the ego who does all that, and you are not the ego, and you are not the body or the mind, then you wake up, and peace is already there. It's always been there. But we cover it with illusion. Your joy, your happiness, Your grace is always there. You have to awaken to it.
Why doesn't a child or a baby have the realization?
Because a baby came through karmically. It has karma inside of it. It has to experience certain phases of its existence. But it has more peace than grown-ups.
Is there still a rudimentary mind that's oscillating that prevents realization?
The mind doesn't exist. It appears to exist.
No, I mean the baby.
The baby has a subconscious mind from a past life that motivates it.
So that's the obstacle to realization in the
baby. Yes. As death? Yes. Everything is destiny. You have no freedom except to not to react and to inquire. That's the only freedom you have, is to inquire within yourself who is bound. But everything else your body does, it's all parapta karma, it's all destiny. Even when I raise my finger like this, it's preordained destiny.
That freedom to not react and to make self-inquiry, it only arises at a certain point before then, it's not available.
It's not available because nobody ever told you about it.
Well, you can even hear of it a number of times.
When you hear it and you do the right thing by inquiring.
There are a lot of people here that don't do the right thing.
So they have to stay in where they are.
So it's not available.
It's always available.
This turning within is not available to them at that time.
It appears that it's not. But they can always turn around and turn within. They always have the freedom to do that. You're always free to turn within. Always.
Robert, that reminds me of something I heard from Maharaj. He said, freedom is not of the body, it's from the body.
Mm.
Is that what you're saying? It's like,
yes.
You see that you have no connection with all this, the karma of the body and so forth. That's the real freedom.
Only the body has karma. Your body and your mind go through karmic experiences. But you're really free. You've always been free and you'll always be free. You have to see it. You have to look at it intelligently. And understand who you really are. And identify with your real self. Instead of identifying with your problems. And that's the freedom you've got, to identify with the self, with God, with consciousness.
Would that be rather than identifying with the mind, with the me?
That's your freedom, not to identify with the mind. Not to identify with your thoughts or your body, but to identify with yourself, with I am, with consciousness.
Which is what we already and always are.
Of course. But you don't know it. So you identify with the world. As soon as you change your identification, you become free.
Who has the freedom to not identify? Is it consciousness or is it the ego?
Consciousness.
So the ego has no choice, choice in the practice or determining a practice.
You use the ego to destroy the ego. You use the ego by looking at it, by watching it, by observing it. and it becomes weaker and weaker and weaker until it disappears entirely.
But it's not the ego observing itself, it's consciousness observing the ego.
Consciousness is always there. But consciousness doesn't really have to observe the ego, because consciousness is self-contained.
Who observes the ego?
The ego. The ego. The ego observes the ego.
It's getting redundant.
Yeah, that's right.
No,
the mind or the ego observes itself and then annihilates itself.
See, it's strange. I know this is a limited thing that can know that there's something beyond its limit. It's strange.
It doesn't really know. It just observes. It watches.
But it can even think that there's, like a mind can think that there's something beyond mind. Like I can think there's an infinity of numbers, but I can't count an infinity of numbers. I have no idea what an infinity of numbers is.
But you can think of them.
I can think of
them. So that's the same mind you're using to destroy it. You're using your mind to destroy your mind.
But isn't consciousness always awake behind that?
Consciousness is always there. But consciousness is aware of itself as consciousness, not as anything else. Everything else is illusory.
What is the relationship between consciousness and mind and thoughts?
There's no relationship whatsoever.
There's no connection at all?
No connection. Consciousness.
There's no causal relationship?
No. Consciousness knows itself. Everything else is illusory. It doesn't exist.
But then consciousness must be perpetrating the illusion.
No.
How does it arise? In consciousness.
It doesn't.
Else consciousness.
It doesn't arise in consciousness at all. You think it does.
Who thinks it does?
You do.
Who the hell are you?
No one. See, we have to stop giving consciousness the credit for making this world. Consciousness has absolutely nothing to do with this world.
Are you claiming a dualism?
There is no world. There is only consciousness. The world is non-existent, but appears to be existent. That's why I always go back to the sky is blue. There's no sky and there's no blue, but look at it, it looks blue. But if you go up into the atmosphere, there's no blue, there's no sky. So the world appears the way it looks. But if you investigate, you will find out it's illusory. It doesn't exist.
That illusion arises and passes away. It must arise within consciousness.
No.
And then disappear.
No.
From whence does it arise?
From no, from nothing. It doesn't arise, it never did. It appears to arise, but it doesn't.
The illusion is that there seems to be an illusion. No, that's right.
You're right, that's right.
You're not joking.
You're right. Nothing exists. Go back to the dream state. When you're dreaming about these things, we're sitting here together, discussing consciousness, discussing the world. And when you wake up, it's gone. It's the same thing.
I'm hearing you the first time, all three times.
I think the thing is, not to answer the question, but to let go of the question.
Well, that's what you think. Welcome to the thought.
If that helps.
What's the relationship between nothingness and consciousness? Are they the same or different?
Nothingness is just a word, and consciousness is just a word.
Do the two words point to the same thing?
You can say that, yes. Emptiness, consciousness, absolute reality, nirvana, they're all synonymous.
Now, why hasn't Henry believed you for the last 3 months when you've been saying this?
He believes me, but he doesn't know it.
Well, that's pretty arrogant.
And why do I, how come I don't believe you either?
Because you don't want to. And you don't have to. But you believe in yourself. If you investigate yourself, you will find out that what I'm saying is true. Because you will find that only the self exists. That's it. The self does not exist as you. The self exists as itself, and you are that.
To say it dwells in you as you. That's what you end each of our meetings with, as you.
Because that's how nice it is to end a meeting like that.
Well, then you're just kidding around with that phrase, that statement, as you?
Everything I said today is kidding around.
Well, you're a good kidder.
Because only the self exists. If I came into this class and told you only the self exists and remains silent, that's it.
You'd thin out your audience quicker.
But you like to hear me talk.
So, Robert, why do you do this? Because you enjoy doing it?
No.
What you're saying? So why do you hold these talks?
I don't know. It just happened. I never voluntarily did it. It just came about.
Do you care whether it continues or not?
I have no care whatsoever.
No care at all, one way or the other?
No.
We'll stay in there anyway. We care. A little.
I
not much. Believe me, not much. You're curious.
See, it's you people that have created me.
Good job. Thank you, man. Congratulations.
I exist because of you.
But the converse is also true.
Yes.
You mean we create your body, mind, and teachings?
Yes, you do.
But it, you yourself perceive nothing. Or you perceive it as illusion. Or you don't give a shit.
That's it.
All three.
Kick to the left.
Oh, boy.
As long as you're aware, if you're not aware of yourself, everything is destiny. When you're aware of yourself, there's no longer any destiny. You become omnipresent. And everything is being created inside yourself. That's why I can say, all this is the self and I am that. Everything is the self. And I am is that. When I say I am that, I am not referring to Robert. I'm referring to I am, consciousness. So all this is the self, and I am is that. And I am is omnipresence. That means everything is consciousness. And there is no world.
Same for each and every one of us.
Of course.
Couldn't be otherwise.
Of course, there's only one.
We're it.
That's it. That's all there is. There are not two selves or three selves. There's one self, and I am is that.
Okay,
same thing. Absolute reality. Power of Brahman. It's all the same. We invent words so that speakers can have something to talk about.
Is it necessary to dwell on these concepts?
If you dwell on the concepts, it lifts you higher. It does lift you higher. It helps. But then in the end, you've got to get rid of all concepts. It's better to dwell on these spiritual concepts than the material world. But they too must be given up sooner or later.
Yes, but the one that gives them up, wouldn't it be the concept itself?
The one that gives them up has to go too. Everything has to go.
So who's to give it up?
You. Because you believe you've got it. As long as you believe you've got something, you've got to give it up. Until you give everything up. That's why Thursday we were explaining, when you get up in the morning, you start by saying, I am not my arms, I am not my legs, I am not my body, I am not my blood, I am not my bones. And whatever is left is you, which is nothing.
Nothing that appears.
Is you. You give up the whole world, and then your true self ensues.
So is that a higher way of looking at it than what we're talking about giving up?
It's not higher and it's not lower. It's just something to do.
Then the world is sort of an opaque veil that obscures the self.
You can say that, yes.
Why did you do that?
Because you wanted to.
Well, you're mistaken.
Then why do you say it?
Why does it continue?
Well, I guess I'm playing with it.
As long as you see the world the way you see it, then you're holding on to it and you're creating it.
Yeah, it has to be. It follows.
So if you change your identification, you will awaken. What do you identify with? I am. I am is another name for consciousness. It's a name for God. Let's do this right now. Let's become quiet and still. Close your eyes. First, pay attention to your breath. And to your feelings. Observe them. Do not try to change them or stop them. Just observe your feelings. You will notice they become quieter and quieter as you do nothing to change them. Your mind begins to slow down as you just watch your thoughts coming and going. Tell the question, who is watching? Who is watching the thoughts and the feelings? The answer comes, I am. Now using your respiration, when you inhale to yourself, say I. When you exhale, say am. This is very powerful to awaken you. With your breath, inhale, say I. exhale, say am. If your mind wanders, gently bring it back to I am. Someone asked me on Thursday, Robert, when you close your eyes, do you meditate? Do you see visions? Do you go deep within yourself? Well, when I close my eyes, I just do it to rest my eyes. There has to be someone present to meditate. And that someone's been destroyed years ago. So when I close my eyes, I'm simply resting my eyes. I do absolutely nothing. Ed has graciously transcribed one of the tapes into a manual. And I'll give you one if you like. Love yourself, to worship yourself, to pray to yourself, because God dwells in you as you. Peace.